eyes of the world, the eyes of the populations of the world are on you, and we have your numbers.
That lingering sense of please remains, and we'll see what comes next.
We need to make sure that what sits there on a piece of paper is actually going to turn into tangible, actionable projects on the ground that are going to make a difference to people's lives.
You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepker. Now, in a moment, we take a closer look at the cladding catastrophe and who pays for it. More than 4 years after the Grenfell Tower fire revealed the dangers of combustible cladding.
But first, Boris Johnson's position as Prime Minister remains precarious as Partygate continues to expand. Downing Street staff are reported to have held two leaving parties at Number 10 in April 2021 on the eve of Prince Philip's funeral. The Prime Minister didn't attend either event, but his former communications chief, James Slack, has apologised for the anger and hurt caused by the gathering. The Met have said the government will not face a police inquiry into alleged pandemic rule-breaking unless an ongoing probe by senior civil servant Sue Gray turns up evidence of criminal behaviour.
Well, joining us now is Peter Bottomley, Conservative MP for Worthing West and Father of the House. Thank you so much for being with us today. I'm going to get on to cladding in a moment. But first of all, it looks like surely a matter of time before this Prime Minister is forced out. Does he still have any of your confidence?
I answer two questions. One is, has he said sorry? The answer is yes. And the second is, will we have the chronology in the report? The answer is yes. And beyond that, I don't have any supplementary answers.
And in terms of the elections in May, do you think that is a key point for Boris Johnson? If the elections are really bad, do you think his position is precarious?
I think we ought to look at it from the interests of local electors in local areas. And what they should be considering is who's going to do best for the quiet, undramatic provision of local services. I can make that argument in my own constituency, my borough council, as I used to for my district council and the county council. I think we ought to approach these elections as to who's going to charge least to provide the best value. And I think that should be the dominant issue. But there have been times, if you go back to 1968, when Labour got wiped out in London because of national conditions, that meant an awful lot of good councillors went. I don't think it was right then to have said, you know, James Callaghan had to go as Prime Minister. There's so many examples of where you really need to...
Did you believe the Prime Minister in Parliament this week, in the apology he gave?
Karen, that's a supplementary question. Mm. And I said already, I'm not going to give a supplementary answer. He said sorry, and we're going to get the chronology.
OK, let's move on then.
All right, well, let's go on to the subject of our special programme now. It's more than 4 years since the deadly Grenfell Tower fire in London revealed the dangers of cladding. The government has now come up with a plan to replace combustible building materials. Michael Gove, the Secretary of State for Levelling Up Housing and Communities, announced this week that he'd written to home builders telling them they'll have to pay a 4% tax over 10 years for remediation on medium-sized buildings. That comes at an estimated total cost of £4 billion.
Now, Gove is the fourth housing secretary to try to tackle the issue that has left hundreds of thousands of leaseholders in potentially dangerous homes that they can't sell and facing the prospect of enormous bills to fix fire safety problems. Well, Peter Bottomley, Conservative MP for Worthing West, Father of the House of Commons, stays with us. Peter, wasn't it obvious that it wasn't people who were going to be able to foot this bill? It was really only industry. Why did it take 4 years and multiple plans to get here?
Because most people don't understand the leasehold system, a feudal leftover from William I, 950 years ago. And it's a battle that I've been going on about for about 15 years. There are others in the campaigning charity Leasehold Knowledge Partnership have been doing it longer than I have. The truth is that by law, a leaseholder is only a tenant, and the tenant owns not a single brick in the building, and yet the law apparently required them to pay all the costs of remediation, of putting right things that others have got wrong. If I can go through a list of those who may have contributed to things going wrong: the developer, the builder, the architect, the surveyor, the component suppliers, the building controllers, the people setting building specifications, everybody except the innocent leaseholder. And although Prime Ministers, Theresa May and others have said the leaseholder shouldn't have to pay and the Secretary of State have, they couldn't get through the Treasury. Now, if I'd been advising the Treasury, I'd have said, the person who needs to be able to make a claim against those responsible is the leaseholder. But the leaseholder doesn't have the right to do that because they don't own a brick. The freeholder won't unless they get indemnity costs from the leaseholder, so nothing much is going to happen. So what you need to do is to have someone who can take over the rights of a leaseholder. Mm. Essentially, you need to find the problem, but, fix the problem, and fund it.
Yes, but Peter, that was all quite... I mean, that was well understood, though, wasn't it? At the time of the Grenfell Tower fire, that was well understood by many industry experts. It was clear that there was going to be a big bill. Will leaseholders be fully protected from having to pay anything with this plan?
I can't say anything because there's still a degree of doubt as to whether it's only cladding or it's other fire defects. Mm. My view is that those responsible for known defects, and they knew it at the time, should have unlimited liability in terms of cost and unlimited liability in terms of facing claims. In fact, it's their insurance companies who will probably be paying. But if you take the major part, if the cost is going to come to about £10 billion, the government needs to find some way of making that advanced money and then get it back from those responsible. And the ways of doing that are relatively simple. I could explain at length, but probably not necessary. The First Secretary of State, James Brokenshire, instructed his permanent secretary to allow £600 million in payment. The next one, Sajid Javid, raised that to £1 billion. Then Robert Jenrick brought in an extra £2 or 3 billion, and now we've got up to about £10 billion. So we're making progress. I do say to the Treasury, if you want to get things right, talk to people like me first, and you can get it right first time rather than fourth time.
Isn't there a danger of a massive row here? A number of the companies involved are not happy with this. So they say that they fitted buildings out according to government regulations at the time. And also, I was interested that you list architects and producers of insulation. A lot of these companies don't seem to be on the hook at all.
Well, they aren't at the moment, but that's because the only person who can make the claim is the landlord, normally the freeholder. The only person on whose behalf they can make it is the leaseholder who hasn't got the money. So we're stuck in a slight legal quandary. But it's quite easy to deal with that by assigning the rights that the leaseholder might have and the landlord to an agency, which can just say to them, look, get round the table. This is going to cost you £10 billion in damages, and it's going to cost you an extra £3 or £4 billion in legal fees unless you come to an agreement. And you'll pretty soon find they'll come to an agreement. It won't be completely fair, it won't be completely pretty, but it'll be completely effective. Mm.
How quickly do you think this may be resolved? I mean, quickly, it's surely going to be years in terms of a resolution. I was doing research on this. I couldn't even find an actual figure, a well-documented figure on even how many people are affected by this in terms of the number of buildings.
Well, this is where we ought to have taken the example of the state of Victoria in Australia, where they got a government agency to go out and assess what needed to be done, got it done, and then start getting the money back from those who are responsible. There are probably 12,000 buildings involved, many of whom leaseholders have been paying for waking watches. They're still paying for sky-high insurance premiums on property that they didn't even own. Government could get a grip. They need to appoint an agency with a tough commercial lawyer who can get people to face the facts, and they'll pretty soon find this is in their interest to do a settlement, which will be pretty comprehensive, pay for everything, and then if necessary, you can fight between the component manufacturers, the building specifiers, the building controllers, the developers, the architect, and everybody else.
There's been a report in The Guardian recently about a 51-storey tower in London with 400 flats, which was going for planning permission with just one staircase. The application has now been withdrawn. Do you think the UK has fully got a grip on problems of fire safety?
No. And Sir David Amos, 20 years ago, set up a fire safety group in Parliament with the help of Ronnie King and other fire chiefs, and they've been making progress. Nick Ross, the well-known personality and broadcaster, points out that people don't die in fires when there are sprinkler systems. But I think even sprinkler systems wouldn't have saved the people who tragically lost their lives at Grenfell, partly because of the single staircase, partly because the way the fire service protocol worked was based on the understanding that a fire would be kept within one flat. Well, because of the external chimney effect of the fire, the cladding, that didn't happen. So I think that people ought to learn the lesson that you need to have dual means of access and escape. You need to have sprinklers, you need to have alarm systems, but most of all, you need to have people not doing the minimum for fire safety and often failing to do that. They ought to be doing the maximum.
Do you think that Michael Gove will meet the deadline that he's imposed in terms of March, getting the agreement of industry?
I have confidence that Michael Gove and his team will meet the deadline. There will still be things to sort out afterwards, but if you get the structure right and the assessment can happen and the works can be done and the funding can be advanced, you can then get the money back so the public sector won't have to pay in the end.
And just briefly, you've been campaigning on wider reforms to the leasehold system, haven't you?
I have. There have been scandals over doubling of ground rents. Well, government has now taken effective action there, and the Competition and Market Authority are requiring developers to pay back and put leaseholders in the position they ought to be in. The Law Commission have produced reports on how you can provide for extension to leases which are not as exorbitant cost and that people can be able to buy their freeholds. We ought to be able to get recognition of residence groups without having to fight through the courts. And some of the people who I regard as bad, who have accumulated thousands and thousands of freeholds, mm-hmm. will soon find it's in their interest to sell those at fair prices to the local leaseholders so they can be both tenants and freeholders. It won't solve every problem, but it'll solve most of them. Uh-huh. It's time for reform.
Now, according to Bloomberg Intelligence, it's the UK's biggest home builders who will be hit hardest by the government's plan for a 4% residential developer surcharge over 10 years to pay for replacing unsafe cladding on blocks of flats. Barratt, Persimmon, Bellway, Taylor Wimpey, Crest Nicholson and Countryside could pay as much as 80% of the tax. But will the funds materialise, given there is expected to be some pushback from developers? Joining us now is David O'Leary, who is Policy Director at the Home Builders Federation. David, welcome to the programme. Thanks so much for being with us. How does the industry view the cladding tax announcement?
Well, I think it's important to say that the cladding tax, as it's become known, the residential property developer tax, is something that the government announced about 12 months ago. And we consulted extensively with the government on that during the course of last year. And that tax is now implemented and will be payable from this year as a 4% surcharge on corporation tax by all home builders with profits above £25 million a year. The principle of that and most of the detail of that we fully supported the government on. Our members fully supported the government on. We thought it was right that the industry as a whole made a contribution to the tune of about £2 billion through that new tax. What's happened this week is that the housing secretary has come back asking for another contribution, this time £4 billion. And, you know, we are... have committed to engage very constructively as much as we possibly can with the government on this. But it is more difficult. You know, we have a new residential property developer tax and we have the building safety levy, which is coming in as well in the next sort of 18 months. So this is additional to that and is in addition as well to all of the money that has been spent and is being spent by the largest developers on remediating buildings where they themselves have been involved in the construction. And we think that amounts to another £1 billion or thereabouts.
Is there a danger that this is unfair to house builders who haven't really been involved in building many flats, that they end up stomaching the cost for this enormous bill?
Well, we think so, yes. And not, you know, certainly some builders have been involved in building blocks which have subsequently been found to have safety issues, and they are, as you would expect from responsible businesses, going back and fixing those problems where they've been shown to have arisen. In addition, you know, we are then paying through new taxes and new levies. So we think that this isn't a problem that's been caused by the development industry or by home builders necessarily. We're at one end of it, but we think there's a sort of broader church of people who really need to be involved in these discussions. The obvious being product manufacturers, who some of whom have brought products to the market which haven't necessarily been fit for purpose or fit for the purposes for which they had shown to be fit for. So we think that this is a conversation that needs to be wider than just a handful of developers, certainly.
Do you think that house builders are an easy target for the government wanting to get money?
I think it's definitely possible to say that the industry is an easy target. Many of the other potential avenues for reclaiming some money or some revenue on for this purpose, when you look at that, it becomes quite difficult. It's quite a tricky business to get more money out of. Well, certainly overseas developers who may have closed down their special purpose vehicles many years ago, other developers who may have gone bust, but then more widely also a number of product manufacturers, certainly the largest ones, are headquartered overseas. They don't really have much by way of operations in this country. So we are, as UK builders, a bit of an easy target, yeah.
David, the government, though, and Michael Gove, made headlines this week by making it fairly plain that there were going to be, tough new measures, further government action, basically, if Gove and the government can't extract this £4 billion out of industry. So there are barely a few weeks, but you think there'll be significant pushback?
Well, we will be taking part in those discussions with government. We haven't had those yet. We heard the announcement at the same time as everyone else, and our members had the announcement at the same time as everyone else. And those round tables that the Secretary of State referenced in his letter to the industry haven't taken place yet. So, there is going to be an open discussion about this with the industry, and we will approach that constructively. I think we would welcome some recognition from the government that the industry, by and large, certainly those the UK's listed house builders, have stepped up to the plate and tried to remediate and put right things where they've been shown to not be right. So some of the tone of the announcement on Monday didn't really make that clear, we don't think. So we're approaching the discussions constructively, but it remains to be seen what is achievable and what isn't.
The industry, the house building industry, has had a very profitable and successful few years, hasn't it? And you have put aside quite a lot of money for these provisions, haven't you? So wouldn't it be better to just to get on with this, pay the money and move on?
Yeah, the money has been put aside by most of the larger home builders and also many smaller private companies who have done the work without necessarily having to report it publicly. But that money's been put aside to put right their own problems. And in this sense, the kind of polluter pays principle that has been talked about much this week chimes to some extent with that action. What the government is asking here is for the industry as a whole, or the larger home builders, to fund the works where there is no developer that is traceable, or it's an overseas developer who cannot be taxed. So that money has been put aside, but it's not it doesn't stretch to £4 billion necessarily, and it can't solve all of the issues that are out there.
Okay, David O'Leary, Policy Director at the Home Builders Federation. So it needs to be more than just industry here. Well, joining us now for a different perspective on this is Riko Vojtulovic, who is the Head of Housing and Planning Policy at the National Federation of Builders. Within the industry, but again, as I say, from a slightly different perspective, why have the manufacturers of the flammable cladding got away with it, or indeed the overseas developers that David just pointed to?
Good morning. I'm going to be a little bit bolder than David when he was a little bit polite when you asked him about whether developers are easy targets. Yes, extremely easy targets. And I predominantly represent small and medium-sized house builders. And it's been a tough 10 years for us. 2 days ago, I received an email from a member saying, I'm leaving the house building industry now. too expensive. The extra taxes that are put on us are too expensive. I'm going to go out of business. I've had to sack 70 people in the last 6 years. Mm. And it's because industry just views us as cash cows, and it's easy to make us the bad people.
But the issue with all of this is that leaseholders being left with those sorts of debts of up to £100,000 to pay to fix these problems that they didn't know about, didn't cause, you know, that's completely unpalatable, I suppose, to the public.
100%. And I think that this plays into the question you actually asked, is why haven't manufacturers been held accountable? And I think it's because developers are such easy targets. And that's hurt leaseholders the most. And we're still at that stage now. In my opinion, I think the government has waited far too long now, and I know it's an uncomfortable conversation to put more taxation on the taxpayers, but they need to solve this and then reclaim the money. And if they go through this legal process of, effectively for some this will be a fifth tax because they've done the remediation work, they've got general taxation, we've got the building safety levy, we've got the property developers tax, they're going to wait another 4 years to have their problems solved. And the misery that leaseholders have gone through for doing absolutely nothing wrong is just abhorrent.
Rico, your solution is not for the builders to pay towards this problem. The problem which they've been, you know, they've taken part in is for the taxpayer to come in and bail the system out.
No. I think it's that the government has two choices. Either way, there will be extra, a fifth for some, a fourth for others, and a third tax on industry for many. They will have to pay and contribute in some way. The government has made that very clear, and they will also target manufacturers. But to get that across the line will take 4 years, potentially. I don't think leaseholders can wait another 4 years. So, unfortunately, especially with rates being as low as they are, if the government rectified these issues and then reclaimed the money from those they found accountable, then at least the leaseholders' issues will be sorted. And it's a really difficult conversation because that's all for us really needs to be sorted. It's making sure the leaseholders now protected. It's been going on far too long. We know the government is, as they say, coming for industry. Who they decide industry is another matter. But if that's their plan, then they need to actually sort things out for leaseholders as soon as possible. And that's really our concern.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.